Here's a look at headlines. A senior Iranian official says the Islamic Republic will respond in kind to any measure taken against its national security from any neighboring country. Iran's top rights official calls on the UK to immediately release a Christian Iranian national who's been imprisoned for 2 decades without even a one-day furlough. Also ahead, Russia's former president says the refusal of NATO members to recognize Moscow's authority over Crimea represents a, quote, systemic threat to his country. Hello and welcome from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, a senior Iranian official says the Islamic Republic will respond in kind to any measure by neighboring countries against its national security. Kamal Kharazi, head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations, was referring to the countries that have normalized ties with Israel. He stressed that targeting Iran's security by those countries will also be met with a direct response to Israel. Kharazi pointed to Iran's extensive military drills, saying they aim to send a message that Iran is capable of hitting targets deep inside Israel in case its vital and sensitive facilities are targeted. He also rejected allegations that Iran is in pursuit of nuclear weapons, saying the Islamic Republic has no such intention, despite technical capabilities to do so. Iran has called on the UK to immediately release a Christian Iranian national, Richard John, who's been held in a British jail. Secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, says the Iranian inmate is not in good condition, is deprived of medical services, and denied even a day-long furlough. Gharibabadi added, despite efforts by the Iranian Foreign Ministry to secure John's release and bring him home, the British side hadn't taken the necessary measures in that regard. The Iranian official held London accountable for putting John's life in danger. According to Gharibabadi, the Iranian national has been incarcerated for nearly 2 decades over some accusations. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has censured Saudi Arabia for opening its airspace to all flights to and from the Israeli-occupied territories. The deputy head of Hezbollah Executive Council says the decision is a, quote, grave insult to all Muslims worldwide and seen as a provocative act against them. Sheikh Nabil Kaouk says security and military cooperation with Israel will make Saudi Arabia a partner in the regime's aggression against Syria, Lebanon, and Palestine. He said this is a betrayal of the entire Islamic community. On Friday, ahead of a controversial visit by U.S. President Biden, Saudi Arabia opened its airspace to all airlines, including those from Israel. That is seen as a step toward normalization of relations between Riyadh and Tel Aviv. In a U.S.-backed move, some Arab countries, including Bahrain and the UAE, restored ties with Israel in 2020. The normalization triggered strong protests across the Muslim world, with the Palestinians complaining they'd been stabbed in the back. Moving on, former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has reiterated that Crimea is part and parcel of his country. Medvedev also called for the recognition of Moscow's sovereignty over the region. He said the refusal of Ukraine and NATO to recognize Crimea as part of Russia represents a systemic and direct threat to his country. He underlined that Crimea, which rejoined Russia following a referendum in 2014, is now Russian soil. Medvedev's comments were aired a day after the Ukrainian military warned that Crimea could be a target for U.S.-made missiles recently deployed by Kiev as it's battling Russian forces. Kiev called it a justified target of attack, claiming that Russia had carried out strikes on its territories from Crimea and the Black Sea. The head of the British Armed Forces dismisses claims that the Russian president is seriously ill or at risk of assassination, calling such speculations wishful thinking. Admiral Tony Radakin made the remark in a televised interview. He said the Russian government is relatively stable and there is nobody at the top to challenge Vladimir Putin. The top British military official also praised Russia's military might. It said that Russia, apart from a nuclear power, has cyber and space capabilities. Radakin, however, cautioned the next British prime minister by saying that Russia poses the biggest threat to the UK. London has been on the front line of sending military aid to Kiev since the beginning of the Ukraine war in February. The economic impact of the war and the sanctions on Russia is showing across the world. Inflation is up in many countries. Global supply chains have been disrupted. and there are fears of food shortages. But now economists fear the situation in Europe could further deteriorate as the continent struggles to find middle grounds on solutions to the current uncertainties.
Gas supplies to Europe have tightened and fuel costs have soared since Russia's conflict with Ukraine in February and subsequent sanctions, leaving countries scrambling to refill storage and diversify supply channels. But despite the heavy costs incurred by their citizens, the Russophobia sentiment by many EU countries, especially those with close ties with the US, continues unabated. The Netherlands, Germany, Poland, and Italy are just some of the European countries who are buyers of Russian oil. But now the EU seems to have imposed sanctions on Moscow without having a plan for life without cheap Russian energy. A clear example of sanctions backfiring would be Germany, which recently reported its first trade deficit in 30 years. While the sanctions on Russia were meant to pressure Moscow in light of its special operation in Ukraine, the backfiring of the EU measures have given birth to disagreements between politicians in the bloc. The Hungarian Prime Minister has said that a failure in rolling back the sanctions on Russia risks the destruction of the European economy. Viktor Orban said European leaders should reconsider their strategy, as sanctions have caused widespread damage to the European economy without weakening Russia or bringing the months-long war closer to any resolution.
Absolutely. I think that the Hungarian leader, Viktor Orban, right now is saying what is meant to be unsaid and unspoken, is that basically the sanctions, this pressure campaign from the European Union against Russia because of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine is having a blowback, as the CIA used to put the term, in that the sanctions are actually working against the European economy. And what Orban was addressing was the fuel crisis that exists right now, compounded with the inflation that we see around the world. We're looking at fuel prices increasing, fuel shortages, and issues with fuel supply and logistics to get that fuel to the European market and to many of the nations. Remember that Hungary is landlocked, so it imports most of its oil via pipeline. And so right now we are witnessing a pretty catastrophic next few months and what some people are predicting to be a very tough winter for Europe.
As it stands, top CEOs are fearing the worst in Europe. They see a big recession in the making. The Eurozone faces concurrent economic shocks from the war in Ukraine and a surge in food and energy prices exacerbated by the conflict, along with a supply shock from China's zero COVID policy, which has affected supply chains. And for the first time, the value of the euro has dropped below the dollar, another bad sign for the Eurozone economy.
In 2021, the EU imported around 155 billion cubic meters of natural gas from Russia. The bloc's proposed gas replacements by the end of 2022, which included LNG diversification, renewables, heating efficiency, pipeline diversification, biomethane, solar rooftops, and heat pumps, however, only amount to around 102 BCM annually. The European Commission and member states' efforts to diversify away from Russian fossil fuels were also clearly demonstrated in a memorandum of understanding with Egypt and Israel for LNG exports from the East Mediterranean. However, analysts predicted that there could be significant cost implications for Europe as it looks elsewhere for gas supplies. The International Monetary Fund even indicated that escalations to existing sanctions against Russia could cascade into even steeper energy price increases, deteriorating corporate and household sentiment and financial market disruption.
The European leaders don't really care about their people, and they don't really care about peace. They are interested in serving the military-industrial complex. They're interested, as members of the ruling class, in serving the lapdogs, you know, in Washington, in Brussels, in Vienna. And so they don't really care, ultimately, about peace and stability. Ukraine here is like a sacrificial lamb for the European leaders by which to pump in more weapons. Germany is rearming itself. NATO is going to increase its weapons. And we see, not only in Europe now, but everywhere, sanctions affect the poorest people. They affect the population. They don't as necessarily affect the leaders.
Spiraling inflation has been eating into the salaries of lower-income Europeans, and this has triggered protests and strikes across the continent over the rising cost of living. From railway workers to pilots, people from all walks of life dissatisfied with the situation have in one way or another expressed their concerns. Now, farmers in Spain have also joined the mass European protests seen in Italy, Poland, and the Netherlands. The farmers' protests seen in Spain, Poland, and Italy come after strikes in the Netherlands have led to many supermarkets running out of food as the anti-government movement continues. The rising cost of fuel has also been a contributing factor to the protests.
Moving on, Britain's climate minister says he may quit if the incoming prime minister doesn't take a strong stance on climate change. Alex Sharma's warning comes as the Tory leadership race enters a critical phase, with the final rounds of voting by MPs this week. He has accused some of the candidates of being lukewarm on net zero targets. This is a poll of Tory rank-and-file members who will have the final say out of the two finalists gave a surprise double-digit lead to Kemi Badenoch. Badenoch has so far refused to commit to the UK's legislated target of reaching net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Britain braces for record-breaking temperatures as high as 41 degrees Celsius this week. The race to replace Boris Johnson began earlier this month after he stepped down following a flood of resignations by Tory members. Firefighters struggle to contain wildfires as devastating flames sweep across southwestern Europe with no signs of abating. Blazes raging in France, Greece, Portugal, and Spain have destroyed thousands of hectares of land. Scores of people have been forced to evacuate their homes. Since last week, several emergency personnel have lost their lives. In Portugal, almost the entire country is on high alert. The fire has been triggered by an unprecedented heat wave in parts of the continent. In Britain, the Weather Office has issued a first-ever red warning for extreme heat, cautioning that there is a risk to life. Scientists blame climate change and warn that further frequent and intense episodes of extreme weather are in prospect. And anti-coup protesters return to the streets of Sudan, demanding an end to the military rule. Police fired tear gas to disperse hundreds of protesters who had gathered in the capital, Khartoum. The country has been the scene of near-weekly protests since October's coup led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. The putsch ousted civilians tasked with forming an interim administration. More than 100 people have so far been killed in crackdowns on protests. Earlier this month, Burhan vowed to make room for civilian groups to form a new transitional government. The pledge was met with skepticism by critics, including the main civilian bloc of the Forces for Freedom of Change. Sudan has been in the grip of unrest since the ouster of longtime rule Omar al-Bashir in 2019. Iran's northeastern city of Mashhad is well known as the spiritual capital of Iran since it hosts the shrine of a holy figure in Shia Islam, Imam Reza. But in this report, Yusuf Jalali takes a look at the city's unseen side, and that's its potential for recreational tourism.
Mashhad, a tourist magnet in northeast Iran. Every year, some 30 million pilgrims from across the Muslim world travel to Mashhad to visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam. But a few miles away from the shrine, there's a whole new world for tourists who would also like to enjoy natural resorts after a spiritual journey. Welcome to Kuh Sangi, a heaven at the heart of Mashhad, as described by this Iraqi family.
We come from Iraq. We visited the holy shrine of Imam Reza, and then I found about this amazing place called Kuh Sangi and came with my family to enjoy the scenery.
It's my second trip to Mashhad. The city offers you a whole traveling package that includes pilgrimage and recreation.
Kuh Sangi is one of a myriad of attractions in Mashhad. Natural resorts such as Shandiz and Chali Dara Valley, and recreational centers such as Water Waves Land and Iram Amusement Park are among the must-see places in Mashhad. The city is also home to 10,000 historical sites. Only 1,500 of those sites have so far been registered and developed for tourists.
One of the major attractions of Mashhad is its restaurants and street eateries. Mashhad is the city of foods. It has numerous restaurants serving a variety of local and international foods. Mashhad also has more than 680 parks, providing a chance for visitors to entertain themselves besides their pilgrimage.
Mashhad is also a hotspot for health tourism in the region. Only in 2021, over 24,000 health tourists visited the city, mainly from Iraq and Oman, earning the city roughly $48 million.
Mashhad is one of the best targets in the world for health tourism. This is because of the high quality and low costs of medical care in Mashhad. Furthermore, the city offers convenient accommodation services to visitors. Up to 52% of hotels in the country are built in Mashhad.
Authorities in Mashhad say the potentials are countless, but so are the challenges. To foreign visitors, Mashhad is still a religious-only city, and many are not aware of its recreational capacities.
We at the municipality are trying to raise awareness of the attractions in Mashhad. One of those efforts is the launching of the English version of our website, which guides foreign travelers through the city online. We will soon launch the Arabic webpage as well.
Due to the large number of visitors throughout the year, Mashhad has one of the best-equipped public transport systems in the country. It has a growing subway network and bus rapid transit system, beside other transportation services, making it easy to access the desired tourist destinations in the city.
Known as the spiritual capital of Iran, Mashhad seems to offer more than a spiritual experience to visitors. With its spectacular natural resorts and growing number of recreational centers, Mashhad municipality plans to turn the city into a tourist hub in the region. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Mashhad.
And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
زیارت قدیر. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Salam, dear listeners. Here is the third and penultimate part of the memorable ziyarat of Qadir, or standard form of salutation to the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the first and second parts of which we presented to you yesterday and the day before. Please stay with us. Our Lord, we believe in what you have sent down, and we follow the Prophet. So write us among the witnesses. Our Lord, do not make our hearts swerve after you have guided us, and bestow your mercy on us. Indeed, you are the All-Munificent. O Allah, we know that this is the truth from you. So let your curse be on those who oppose it, deny it, and gainsay it out of arrogance, and the wrongdoers will soon know at what goal they will end up. Peace to you, O Commander of the Faithful, Chief of the Legatees, the foremost of the devout, and the most self-denying of the ascetics. And may Allah's mercy and His bounties, blessings and greetings be to you. You are the one who gave food for the love of Him to the needy, the orphan and the prisoner, saying, We feed you only for the sake of Allah. We do not want any reward from you, nor any thanks. And it was concerning you that Allah revealed, they prefer others to themselves, though poverty be their own lot. And those who are saved from their own greed, it is they who are the felicitous. You were the one who suppressed your anger and excused the faults of the people, and Allah loves the virtuous. You are the one who were patient in stress and distress, and in the heat of battle. You distributed the public funds equitably and carried out justice amongst the subjects. You knew Allah's laws better than the entire creation, and Allah the Most High has informed us concerning the grace that He bestowed upon you when He said, is someone who is faithful like someone who is a transgressor? They are not equal. As for those who have faith and do righteous deeds, for them are gardens of the abode, a hospitality for what they used to do. You are the one endowed with the knowledge of the Quranic revelation, the rules of interpretation, the Prophet's designation, and to you belong the prominent and noteworthy occasions and illustrious stations, the historic days such as the day of the Battle of Badr and the day of the Confederates. As God says, when the eyes rolled with fear and the hearts leaped to the throats, and you entertained misgivings about Allah, it was there that the faithful were tested and jolted with a severe agitation. And when the hypocrites were saying, as well as those in whose hearts is a sickness, Allah and His Prophet did not promise us except delusion. And when a group of them said, O people of Yathrib, this is not a place for you, so go back. And a group of them sought the Prophet's permission, saying, our homes lie exposed to the enemy. Although they were not exposed, they only sought to flee. And Allah the Most High has said, but when the faithful saw the Confederates, they said, this is what Allah and His Prophet had promised us. And Allah and His Prophet were true. And it only increased them in faith and submission. Then you slew their Amr and routed their hosts, and Allah sent back the faithless in their rage without their attaining any advantage. And Allah spared the faithful of fighting, and Allah is all strong, almighty. And on the day of the Battle of Uhud, when they were fleeing without paying any attention to anyone, while the Prophet was calling them from their rear, and you were chasing away the multitudes of the idolaters, from the Prophet to the right and to the left, until Allah made them withdraw from the two of you in fear, and through you gave victory to the defeated Muslim troops. And on the day of the Battle of Hunain, as declared in the revelation, when your great number impressed you, but it did not avail you in any way, and the earth became narrow for you in spite of its expanse, whereupon you turned your backs to flee. Then Allah sent down His composure upon His Prophet and upon the faithful. The faithful were you and your comrades, and Abbas, your uncle, who was shouting out to the fleeing Muslim warriors, O disciples of the Surat al-Baqarah, O performers of the allegiance of the tree. Whereupon they responded to him after you had spared them the hardships of warfare and took upon yourself the defense of Islam without them. Thereat they returned having lost hope of the divine reward and yet hopeful of the fulfillment of the promise of Allah through repentance, and that is referred to in the words of Allah, glorified be His name, then Allah shall turn clemently that to whomever He wishes. While you enjoyed the high station of fortitude and attained a great reward. And again, on the day of Khaybar, when Allah divulged the weakness of the hypocrites and decimated the infidels, and all praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of all the worlds, though they had certainly pledged to Allah before that they would not turn their backs, and pledges given to Allah are accountable. My Master, you are Allah's conclusive testament, the clear path, the bountiful blessing, and the shining proof. Hence, congratulations to you for the grace bestowed on you by Allah, and woe to your ignorant enemies. You participated with the Prophet, may Allah bless him and his household, in all his battles and campaigns, carrying the banner before him and fighting at his fore with the sword. On account of your well-known judiciousness and your insight in all matters, the Prophet made you commander on many occasions, and never was anyone appointed commander over you. Many were the cases when your God-wariness withheld you from carrying out your resolve, whereas others followed their desires in similar cases, leading the ignorant to imagine that you lacked the ability to carry it out. By God, those who imagined such a thing went astray and were not rightly guided. You have certainly clarified the misconceptions of those who have entertained them and disputed your abilities. With your statement, may Allah's blessings be upon you. The experienced and the ingenious person cites the course of artifice, and short of it, sees the barrier posed by the God-fearing, whereat he disregards it right away at the first sight. But those who have no scruples in religion seize the opportunity provided by it. By God, you have stated the truth, and those who pursued false ideas were losers. When the two who broke their oath of allegiance tried to deceive you, saying that they intended to perform Umrah pilgrimage, you told them, by your lives, your intention is not to perform Umrah, but to carry out treason. Then you took their oath of allegiance and made them renew their pledge, but they rallied to sedition. Thus, when you apprised them of their conduct, they disregarded it and went back without drawing any benefit, and the outcome of their conduct was ruin. Then they were followed by the Syrians, led by the rebel Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan, and you marched towards them for the war of Siffin, after having vindicated your stand, whereas they neither followed the true religion nor reflected upon the Quran. They were the misguided rebel who disbelieved what had been revealed to Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and supported the antagonists against you, whereas Allah, the Most High, had commanded them to follow you and urged the faithful to support you when He, the Almighty and Glorious, declared, O you who have faith, be wary of Allah and be with the truthful. Dear friends, that was the third and penultimate part of the famous ziyara of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, for the blessed day of Ghadir. Tune in again tomorrow to listen to the fourth and concluding part. God bless you. Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and since we're on the threshold of the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Qadir, the day God finalized the issue of succession to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, here is some food for thought from his divinely appointed vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Unfortunate is he who cannot gain a few sincere friends during his life. And more unfortunate is the one who has gained them and then lost them through his deeds.
Eid Qadir celebrates the divine appointment of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of the Holy Prophet, as Prophet Muhammad's vicegerent and successor. Congratulations to all our Muslim listeners on the auspicious occasion of Eid Qadir.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the mistakes of the parents. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In today's lesson, we are going to talk about the main mistakes the parents do while doing the parenting upon their kids. One of the main or among the biggest mistakes some of the parents do or the parents do that has a negative effect on the child is duality, or I will call it duality in their sayings and actions. You see, sometimes a parent does things that are definitely different from what they're saying. A parent can be telling their children to do something, to do a certain job, let's say, in life. A parent will be telling their children, hey, my kid, you should be studying on time. You should be waking up on time, going to school on time, let's say. You should be, dressed nicely, dressed neatly. But while the parent is saying all these things, him as a parent, as a guide, is not doing the things himself. He's not punctual. He's not showing up on time to his programs. He's not showing up on times on his workplace, actually. So the duality in their sayings, like I'm saying this, but I'm not doing what I'm saying, is a really big problem, a really big mistake during parenting or in parenthood. Because a child, what the child is looking at the parent as a pest setter, the child mostly, what the child is looking from the parent is, I will say like an example, I'll give it a name, a pest setter in their life. When they realize that their parents are not practicing what they are saying, what they are saying, or what they ought to have done, the consequences of this will be bad. It may result in the disobeying of their command in the future. Otherwise, how can a father who is smoking order his children not to smoke. That means even if he is smoking secretly, they may detect it one day, and his respect in their sight may fall. So a parent should do exactly what they are telling their kid or their child to do.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is A to Z. We talked about a few mistakes that parents do upon the kids, upon the children, or the mistakes parents do during the parenting that ends up in destroying the child, in making the child to be less confident. So, among the mistakes that a parent can do, we are talking about the mistakes of the parents. Another mistake of the parent is enlarging the mistakes of the children, considering something small to be so big. You see, a child does mistakes, definitely. In one day, a child could do like 100 mistakes in their life. But you as a parent, what you can do is look at that mistake and see how you can correct the kid without showing it like it's a big thing, like making it a big deal or making a big deal out of it, as if the mistakes are not forgivable or there is no way of correcting them. No. To the extent that some parents, you know, sometimes some parents do make these mistakes look so big to the extent that some parents, because of their impatience, they say the children have changed. They no more respect us now. They are not as they were yesterday. There's a way these mistakes can be changed. It can be corrected. Even though there's every possibility that most of the so-called problems can be solved through love, wisdom, and understanding. Imam Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salam said, "If a young fellow reprove you, leave him. Maybe he will be embarrassed with what he did." So it's a mistake that we should look up upon, or that a parent should look upon and ponder upon it and not make a big deal out of it. Understand it, just try and correct it in the softest words possible. And don't force the kid, don't start and shouting on him, making it at least as if the child has thrown a bomb in a country, as if the child has done like a terroristic problem. No. Just look at it, take time, talk to the kid softly, and the kid will definitely understand you. And this will lead to a very good result in parenthood. Thank you for listening. Fi amanillah. Bye.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Five young and rare Bonelli's eagles born on a breeding farm in France are taking a journey to Spain, where they will be released into the wild. These eaglets were born in captivity, which is a rare feat for these endangered species. Three of the five are ready to be released and have been fitted with GPS microchips for tracking purposes. Their initial release date was delayed because of several weeks of bird flu, which made traveling impossible. The other two eagles are too young to be reintroduced and are still being hand-fed from behind the curtain. They will make the journey sometime in July. The breeders, however, are worried about how to sustain the program as their birds begin to age.
Aigle de Bonelli,
The Bonelli's eagle is a species that is relatively scarce. In France, we must have about 40 couples, something like that, who produce about 20 chicks per year. Here, we have 5 chicks, but my birds are very old. Still, 5 chicks is not nothing for a species which relies on a small reproduction number.
Pacto also says his 5 pairs of eagles are aged between 18 and 30 years, and 3 of them are now too old to breed. He says the number of Bonelli's eagles had dropped dramatically since the 1980s, mainly to electrocution on high-voltage lines. Due to the reintroduction program, the population of these eagles has nearly doubled over the past 2 decades.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There, they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
The more scientists make progress in space exploration, the more they get persuaded to delve into the mysteries of the universe. Now, the release of stunning full-color images from deep in the cosmos has put astronomers on the edge of their seats. NASA has unveiled high-resolution pictures from its James Webb telescope, which is the largest space-based observatory ever launched. The images took 2 weeks to render from raw telescope data. The $9 billion infrared James Webb was launched on Christmas in 2021. It reached its destination in solar orbit nearly 1 million miles from Earth a month later. Then the telescope underwent months-long process to unfurl all of its components. James Webb is now finely tuned and fully focused. The telescope is expected to shed light on the life cycles on planets of planets and galaxies.
The International Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival has drawn fashion designers from Iran and around the world. The designs displayed are trendy and at the same time they conform to the Islamic dress code. Yusuf Jalali has this report.
It's the Iranian fashion's biggest day. The 11th Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival brought under one roof fashion designers from across Iran and some other Muslim nations to step up their designs.
I have participated here as a fashion designer. I am so happy to be a part of this event because it acts as a platform that links designers to producers and it helps like promote quality design in the market.
This festival is a major event in the Islamic world's fashion industry because it helps promote fashionable clothes that conform to Islamic guidelines.
A typical Iranian woman wears a button-up coat called manto and a scarf covering the head. Some others wear a piece of cloth called chador, which covers the body from head to toe. One of the challenges Iranian fashion designers have to deal with is to tailor their designs to Islamic dress code or hijab while keeping them trendy.
Clothes represent the identity of a nation. As a designer, my mission is to design clothes that best represent the dresser's nationality and their culture. At the same time, the aesthetic aspect of the garment need to catch the attention. I think this is an ultimate artistry if accomplished.
Smuggling is another persisting problem in the Iranian clothing industry. Out of the $8 billion annual turnover of Iran's garment industry, a whopping $5 billion is supplied through smuggling, say activists here. Experts say one of the reasons smuggling has the lion's share in Iran's clothing market is that it's more cost-effective to import foreign clothes rather than produce them domestically.
We are making our best efforts to push down the production costs, including the associated taxes, in order to promote designs that reflect our Islamic and Iranian identities, opposed to Western designs that seek to dominate global markets.
With all the actors in Iran's fashion industry present in the Fajr Festival, the event is seen as a place to highlight and address the challenges with the aim to provide the stage for Iranian fashion activists to shine in the domestic market.
It might seem contradictory when we would associate fashion with the Islamic dress code, but it's the art of a fashion designer that sews traditions to style and designs clothes that are both stylish and hijab. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Elephants are the largest living animals on Earth that, in many cultures, are associated with good luck, wisdom, and fertility. But their overpopulation has become a matter of concern in the southeastern African nation of Malawi.
We want to reduce the population of elephants in this park, in Luanda National Park, because currently we have 600 plus elephants in this park. We would be comfortable, ecologically speaking, that is, to have 300 elephants in this park.
Officials say they will relocate 250 elephants from a national park in a southern town to another park by the end of July. They say the plan is part of a national conservation initiative to maintain healthy habitats in the country's national parks. Establishing viable elephant populations and ensuring the prosperity of local communities around the parks are said to be the other aspects. Residents say the elephants often stray into their gardens and damage their crops. Authorities had relocated some 300 elephants from the same town in 2019.
A zoo in Mexico City celebrates the birthday of two very special residents, bringing cheers and excitement to visitors. Chinese pandas Xin Xin and Xuan Xuan have turned 35 and 33, becoming the oldest pandas in human captivity. China gifted their ancestors to Mexico back in 1975 to boost the relationships between the two countries. Later on, and thanks to the hard work of caretaker teams, 8 cubs were born from the parents. Zoo officials say for them, learning the A to Z of panda care was a long journey.
The pandas living in Chapultepec, Xuan Xuan and Jin Jin, turned 35 and 33 years old, respectively. When their parents arrived, we didn't know much about pandas, so vets and biologists had to follow recommendations from those who took care of giant pandas in the People's Republic of China. From then on, we evolved. We found new and better diets and daily care practices such as vaccine administration or parasite removal. Then they started to breed, which was quite a success since it was the first panda that was born and which survived, named Toy.
The birthday celebration has coincided with the zoo's 99th foundation anniversary. A panda's normal lifespan is estimated at about 15 to 20 years for those out in nature and about 30 years for the ones in human care. But the good news is, despite their old age, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin are in perfectly good shape. A goat in the Pakistani city of Karachi has made the headlines for its not-so-ordinary looks. The animal owns strikingly long ears. Simba was only born last month and his ears have already reached the length of 54 centimeters. The goat's breeder, Muhammad Hassan Narejo, says he has approached Guinness World Records to see if Simba can be included as the greatest of all time, or the goat, for this peculiar feature. The kid is in the center of attention, so he receives all sorts of help to live a smoother life. This includes a special harness for his ears and daily religious rituals to wish him good health. The breeder says that by promoting Simba's image, he is trying to introduce Pakistan as a major goat breeding nation.
The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Asmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the grey green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyya is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The West seems more fixated on spending social wealth on the military rather than addressing the climate catastrophe. The money that is being poured into the Western military establishments does not only drift away from any climate spending, but also promotes greater climate catastrophe. The U.S. military is the largest institutional polluter on the planet. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written by Murad Qureshi, a former member of the London Assembly and a former chairman of the Stop the War Coalition, titled $2 Trillion for War versus $100 Billion to Save the Planet. Please stay with us to hear more about the details. During late April and early May, South Asia experienced the terrible impacts of global warming. Temperatures reached almost 50 degrees Celsius in some cities in the region. These high temperatures came alongside dangerous flooding in northeast India and in Bangladesh, as the rivers burst their banks, with flash floods occurring in such places as Sunamganj in Sylhet, Bangladesh. Samuel Haque, the director of the International Center of Climate Change and Development, is from Bangladesh. He's a veteran of the UN climate negotiations. When Haque read a tweet by Marianne Carlson, the co-chairwoman of the UN's Adaptation Committee, which said that more time is needed to reach an agreement while referring to the negotiations on loss and damage finance, he tweeted, "The one thing we have run out of is time. Climate change impacts are already happening, and poor people are suffering losses and damages due to the emissions of the rich. Talk is no longer an acceptable substitute for action." Carson's comment came in light of the trickle slow process of agreement on the loss and damage agenda for the 27th Conference of Parties, meeting to be held in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, this November. In 2009, at COP15, developed countries of the world had agreed to a $100 billion annual adaptation assistance fund, which was supposed to be paid by 2020. This fund was intended to help countries of the Global South to shift their reliance on carbon to renewable sources of energy and to adapt to the realities of the climate catastrophe. However, at the time of the Glasgow COP26 meeting in November 2021, developed countries were unable to meet this commitment. The $100 billion may seem like a modest fund, but is far less than the $1 trillion climate finance challenge that will be required to ensure comprehensive climate action. The richer states led by the West have not only refused to fund adaptation seriously, but they have also reneged on the original agreements, such as the Kyoto Protocol. The U.S. Congress has refused to ratify this important step toward mitigating the climate crisis. The United States has shifted the goalpost for reducing its methane emissions and has refused to account for the massive output